Hello, welcome to Bird Camp Wonderland. This is a book special with Dave Seeger and his new book, Supporting Arsenal, A Funny Old Game. Dave, hello, welcome.
Good evening, Jason. Thanks for inviting me on.
That's great to have you back, pal. It's great to have you back.
2 years later.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? It's the first time we actually spoke was during your first book, George Armstrong on the Wing, which is fantastic. I'm really proud to have done that book review with you. And now we're on to a new one.
Yes, indeed.
It's fantastic to have you here. Also, we have the button monkey. It's Danny, the GFP.
I'm only here to press record.
Chirp in whenever you want, pal.
I will
chirp
do.
Whenever you want. Okay, right. It's during the interlull. Basically, it's the perfect opportunity to have a book review. And Dave has written a new book, Supporting Arsenal is a Funny Old Game, and in which he's basically lined up some very, very well-known, I mean, you've got actually Hollywood stars now in this, and some up-and-coming young comedians. Just to give you a quick run through, Alan Davis and Ian Stone, you'll know him from the Tuesday Club as well, Dara O'Brien, Ramesh Ranganathan, Hugh Dennis, Matt Lucas, Paul Kay, Clive Anderson, Chris Martin, Gary Marshall, Alex Brooker, Tom Rosenthal, Jim Campbell, the legendary writing duo Marks and Gran, and unfortunately, Carl Donnelly.
And you missed Milton Jones.
And I missed Milton Jones, Jesus. And his dad's a Welshman as well. Oh, no. So the first thing is, Dave, what was the inspiration behind the book?
Well, it's sort of sequence of events, really. The publisher who did the Geordie book with me was asking me if I, you know, had any other ideas for a follow up or a new book, and the honest answer was, I didn't really. I was hoping to do one. I'm still hoping to do one on David Rodcastle with his family, and that may happen, but it wasn't ready, and the time wasn't now. And the inspiration came literally like a bolt from the blue. Really, I sit next to Alex Brooker in the stadium. And we've become very good friends over the last 2 or 3 years. And he'd been asked to do an autobiography. Now, for most 31-year-olds, you think, well, that's ridiculous. But when you've been through what Alex has been through in his life, with the operations and the success now with The Last Leg and so forth, there's quite a story to be told. He wrote a synopsis for the publisher, and the story has it that the publisher came back and said, well, Mr. Brooker, that's very nice, but half the stories in here seem to relate to Arsenal. That's going to switch off half your audience. To which Alex said, well, I relate everything significant in my life to something that happened to Arsenal because that's the way I am. Parents got divorced, this Arsenal event, you know, and so on and so forth. And they said, well, 50% of the audience may not be football fans, so we need to change it. And he said, do you know what? I don't think I'll do it right now. So it was this conversation that set me thinking. I think, well, we all know there's so many Arsenal supporting comedians, and I'm fortunate enough to sit next to one and sit in the block next to Alan and Ian Stone. So I thought, well, I wonder if I can get one or two of them to agree to an idea. If there's so many stories that Alex has got, presumably we're all football fans. We all have stories about our support, and we love chatting about them, and we love sharing the banter. So I thought, well, if I can get Alex on side and Ian Stone on side, and we'll see where it goes from there. And that's exactly what happened. This was at the back end of last year. So,
brilliant. It's strange where people end up sitting next to in the Emirates. You know, I know Andrew Fife sits not far from Dara O'Brien, and he's
in the posh seats. Alex and I aren't.
Well, you know Andrew Fife, you know, I mean, only the best will do. He actually asked him to come on the pod one day, and which is about. He replied, I don't think I want to do that. Honestly, I haven't got time. Oh, no, we'll make time for you. No, I don't think I want to do that. Which I kind of liked. Not many people say no to old Fifey. Right, back to the book, back to important stuff. You got a really varied selection of contributors to the book. Obviously, they are all comedians. Really, one of the things reading the book that made me that you realise is they're not born celebrities, they're not born comedians, they find their own path. There's some really great stories of people becoming Arsenal fans. I particularly liked Hugh Dennis is. any others which kind of struck you there?
Well, as you say, the nice thing is they're all very different. And I think the thing that struck me the most is I didn't want to be formulaic. I didn't want to have a set way of doing each interview, because some of them were face-to-face, most of them were, some of them were on Skype, some of them were by email. So there was no set formula. But what I wanted to do was do as much research as I could to make sure that I had pertinent questions, that, you know, relevant questions. And the thing that struck me as soon as I started doing this was, if you just say, take Alan Davis, Ian Stone, whatever, you Google interviews with, and you look at all past interviews they've done for newspapers and radio shows and so forth, what becomes apparent is people haven't asked them questions about Arsenal. Now, I know if I'm a mad Arsenal fan, which I am, you know, if someone's going to interview me, you know, I would want to talk about Arsenal. And I just think what happens normally is they're just about to embark on a stand-up tour. They've just got a new sitcom coming out. They've written a new show. So the interview is obviously about that. And they want to promote that, which is fine. But I'm thinking, all these guys, they must want to talk about Arsenal. They're all massive, keen Arsenal fans, and they never get a chance. So there was not a lot of source material, if you like, where I could say, oh, you told this journalist this about your Arsenal support, which is a good thing in one way, because it meant I was breaking new ground. But it was weird in another way, that I sort of thought I would find pointers in my research. So it's a fascinating thing. So everyone is completely different, and every story, you know, very, very different. As you say, that anyone that struck me, no one in particular, I love them all. I love them all, to be honest.
Yeah, I can imagine. I got to be honest, leading on from that, and you talk about the pertinence of Arsenal to these guys' lives. Some of the stories really touched me. A couple made me really think. There's Chris Martin and his grandfather, Ian Stone and anti-Semitism. You didn't shy away from that. Was it quite important to you to make sure that, you know, as much as there's the fun side of supporting the Arsenal, there were there's a harder side to it as well. There's a
well, yeah. I think that first Ian was the second interview I did after Alex, so it was very early on, and the Jewish background did come through in the research. So being of a similar age to him, a little bit younger, but also growing up, starting to go to Arsenal in the 70s and early 80s, I knew what it was like. I mean, I was on the North Bank when he was on the North Bank. And so I did want to ask that question. But I think also it was after that second interview that I sort of figured the strap line for the book should be seriously funny, yet funnily serious. Because whilst all the people I'm interviewing are either comedians or comic writers, therefore you would hope they're going to be funny, and most of them were.
Yeah.
Supporting your football team is also a very serious business. We take our support very seriously. So I guess that came through in virtually every chapter. You know, I almost got to the point in some interviews, I know Matt Lucas in particular, which was a Skype interview because he's Hollywood based these days, was, you know, after about an hour and 30 minutes, because, you know, you've had him on the pod, Danny, but, you know, he can chat Arsenal all day. But at the end of it, he's like, Dave, we need to carry on. I haven't been funny yet. and you want me because I'm funny. And I said, to be honest with you, Matt, you don't realise it, but you have been. And, you know, and you've got to realise also, I'm not telling him this, but you're taking the material. I'm not going to use it exactly as they've said it. You know, I'm going to link the series of things they've talked about in hopefully an amusing way, which is what I've tried to do. But it's that conversational piece that brings that out, really. But that's my point. It is seriously funny, but it is funnily serious at the same time. So.
No, absolutely. You know, I really enjoyed reading the book. I was laughing one moment, and the next minute, you know, the story regarding Eboué coming on as a sub came on, and I remember harking back to sort of watching that and thinking, oh my God, you know, you just felt for the guy. And it came through. The book, it invoked a real feeling, some nostalgic feelings for me. I could almost smell where I was at the time, if you understand. You know, people talk about certain games, people who missed certain games, people who were at certain games. It's quite strange, the different perspectives from which I now see my own memories. Did you feel the same way reading the book, or writing the book?
I did, I suppose, with the exception of a couple of the interviewees, I was probably older, or as old as most, but older than the majority. And yeah, the people of my generation, I mean, I certainly read Alan Davis's book, you know, about growing up as a teenager. We're a year apart, and everything that he related to in his book, you know, graffiti, Billy Bragg, Liam Brady, for the Panini football stickers, you know, I felt very linked to that, and I felt the same. That came through in interviewing Alan and Ian Stone and Matt Lucas, people in their mid to late 40s, early 50s. We all had the same hero in Liam Brady. And then, but equally, when I'm interviewing people in their 40s, I can relate to the fact that their obvious hero was Ian Wright or Tony Adams. And then latterly, the younger comedians, it seemed to be either Dennis Bergkamp and Thierry Henry. So I can actually go through and relate to all of that. But for me, it's particularly Liam Brady. But I can understand, you know, in the era you started supporting the club and why you started supporting the club. And in fact, as you will have, you've read the book, two or three, like certainly Ramesh and Jim Campbell, Ian Wright was virtually the reason why they started supporting the club in some instances, or certainly their first hero. And you can relate to that. And I think that came out probably everybody. You know, it wasn't a question that I necessarily asked everybody, but it tended to come out in every interview. That's probably one thing that is a constant theme. Each of the interviewees will have given their first sort of love, if you like, as a player and the person that inspired them as a supporter when they first started supporting.
Yeah, I've got to be honest with you. One of the parts that really made me laugh was you talking about Ramesh Ranganathan. You know, you see him on stage as such a cynical comedian.
Yeah.
And yet, to quote him, losing his shit holding.
Oh, yeah, that's a great phrase. Yeah.
I mean, we've been lucky enough, as I say, we've had Matt Lucas on the pod, and we've had some people, even Dave Hillier, to, you know, to have somebody who's played in the title winning side with the Arsenal. At times, I've been a fanboy, and it was really funny relating to these guys being in the same place. I mean, you mentioned Ian Wright. Our own Danny worships the ground Ian Wright walks on, you know, and we all have them, and it was lovely to see that side.
Ramesh is a brilliant example of what you said earlier about, you know, these people weren't always famous. I mean, Ramesh, 5 or 6 years ago, was still a teacher, and he couldn't afford to go to the Arsenal. Ridiculous to think now that he's in, you know, 3 months into a 5-month UK sellout tour at sort of large venues, whereas, you know, in 2011, he was teaching maths in a school in Horsham.
And he's got a new second season of his new TV series starts again soon.
Absolutely.
Absolutely genius. He's such a funny bloke.
Yeah. It's just that lovely change, you know, from not being able to afford to go and see the team to now not having time to go and see his team because he's so successful. But, yeah, brilliant. And I love the whole background of that because, you know, people will read the chapter hopefully, but, you know, his father, you know, he's second generation, but his father and his mother, you know, emigrated from Sri Lanka to Britain. And his dad, because they lived in Finchley, decided to support Arsenal, but he didn't think it was his place to go to football. You know, that wasn't the culture. So he loved it from afar and he watched it in pubs when he could. He watched it on the television. And then latterly, when he first started going to football, it was Ramesh that took him. But the brilliant story in that he was an accountant, then a finance director, so successful that he bought the company. He then moved the company from Finchley to Crawley, where they moved to. And then he used to go to the pub at lunchtime and he got bored of running a company. So he bought the pub and converted it into an Arsenal pub. So, I mean, how many Sri Lankan landlords do you think there are in Great Britain? And how many running Guna pubs? You know, it's just a fantastic story.
But there's so many fantastic backstories in there. And as you say, you know, I must be honest that, you know, I class myself as a foreign fan. You know, I'm not a London boy. I'm not English. I'm a Welshman. And so Dara O'Brien and Ramesh really sort of resonated with me. And you know, I for a book like this, okay, yes, these are all British-based comedians. But I think a lot of the foreign fans will be able to really relate to the stories from these guys. It's quite fantastic, you know.
I hope so, because it is something that worries me, to be honest with you, Jason, because I do think of it as, because all these comedians are, you know, British or Irish, and there is a, obviously there is a British humour, as we know, and does every other country relate to our humour? I know it's an Arsenal book, but it's also, will people relate to the humour? Will people want to buy the book? I hope so, because I think you're right, but I worry that they won't.
Jace, yes, just before anybody tweets in complaining that you said Dara O'Brien is British, we know he's not. He's Irish.
I didn't say British. I said British or Irish.
Jason, you were saying that they're all British comedians.
Oh, you know what I mean.
I know what you mean. You know what these shitbags are like.
But this is the thing.
They'll be straight on your case.
but because sort of he's Irish, I'm Welsh, that's why I relate to it so much. You
I know what you mean. It's a good point. I think it's a good point that that Dave was saying about when Ramesh was growing up, that he didn't go to Arsenal games. That I was thinking that's so similar to many Arsenal fans nowadays. Most young Arsenal fans don't go to games they can't afford to.
Well, yeah, but he was brought up in it. His dad just didn't think it was right. It wasn't in their culture, and he didn't think it was what they should do. So he used to have friends who went, and he was jealous because he'd never had anyone to take him. You know, so he didn't go to his first game, I think, till he was 18.
Yeah, and it doesn't just apply to Ramesh. In a different way, it applies to Hugh Dennis as well. But for all
that's a brilliant story. That's a brilliant.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I've got to be honest. You're saying you're worried about people relating to it. I think it's universal. I genuinely think it's universal. There's some fantastic aspects of there which everyone can relate to, and even if you've just been supporting the Arsenal for a few years. You know, you go back and you know about the history of a lot of the games, etc. You will pick up and relate to it, and it's a real strength. I've got to congratulate you on that. One of the funniest stories where you had to be around at the time is the Rosenthal kit issue. Yeah. I mean. That was... People have got to buy it and read it, okay? But if you were around in the 90s, you will love it. It was absolutely fantastic. let's go to the agent provocateur, Carl Donnelly.
Yeah, to be honest with you, it wasn't my idea. I have to give credit to Mr. Alan Davis on that one. When I was interviewing, in fact, it was even before I met him. He when I was exchanging messages with him on Twitter, he said, "Why don't you get a Spurs supporting comedian to sort of throw in a controversial chapter, having a rant about how much they hate Arsenal?" And of course, the first funny thing is there aren't many Spurs supporting comedians. Surprise, surprise. But Carl Donnelly does a pod with Chris Martin, actually, a Spurs Arsenal duo. And I asked Carl, but what Carl doesn't know, even to this day, is that I put the chapter in the middle of the book and called it the chapter in the middle sex. But so he doesn't know that until he reads it.
It made me laugh.
But he wrote it far too well, though, didn't he?
Yeah, to be fair, it was really quite interesting, and it does make you think. It does make you think, but I'm not going to give him any more time. Bloody Spence. you talk about podcasts there. A lot of the Arsenal podcasts are quite well represented or podcasts in general, rather. Football.
Yeah,
Ramble.
I did think it came up in a lot. Certainly, Alex and Tom. Quite regularly guests on Footballtastically with Boyd Hilton, who wrote the foreword for the book. And obviously Jim Campbell is one quarter of the Football Ramble, which is the largest football podcast in the country, as far as I'm aware. And ironically, their first book comes out 2 days before mine, officially, on the 20th. The first Football Ramble book is direct competition with my own book.
Don't buy that one, buy this.
I know. But I mean, a lot of people... perhaps not as many people will know who Jim Campbell is as the likes of Hugh Dennis and Alan Davis, but genuinely funny guy, genuinely funny stand-up. But, you know, obviously he's been running this Football Ramble successfully for a long time and has very, very, I thought, very considered and insightful views on the whole sort of phenomenon of podcasts and social media in general, from within and as a guest as well. I thought that particular section in his chapter was really, really interesting. If not, not hysterically funny necessarily, but just fascinating.
Actually, that's part of my next question for you. That segues nicely into it. That particular section did really strike me. From a personal point of view, I was a fan of ABW. Mm-hmm. And then myself and Danny had a chat one day doing the Christmas greetings or New Year's greetings. And all of a sudden I was asked to come on, and from there I've become a member of the podcast.
An integral, important member. Don't underdo yourself. He's the first person we run to when we need a backup host or someone to organise stuff, because we're terrible at organising. Well, I am terrible at organising. So don't underplay your part, young Mr. Davies. Davies.
Look, it's nice to be part of something. And that's what sort of kind of got me about it. During the part in the book, so many of these guys, they're now celebrities, etc., but Jim Campbell, I really related to it, where there's an almost a kind of innocence about the way he talks about, you know, okay, they may be celebrities in that part of their life. There's an innocence towards their views on football. There's a real honesty about the way they see it and how much joy they get out of maybe whether it be podcasting or just talking about the Arsenal. That really comes across in the book as well. That must have filled you with pride, being an Arsenal fan for so long, and you know, being somebody who writes about the Arsenal on a day, you know, on a weekly basis.
Yeah, no, I think it does, and I think Jim had it right. Although I'd never thought about it in as much as he's obviously thought about it, is that the reason why the pods and the blogs, you know, like the well-known ones like the Arse blog and the long-established ones, why they're so successful is they can do the media in a way that the established media can't do it. And he's very, very right, isn't he? You know, Alan Shearer or Robbie Savage couldn't talk about football in the way that Andrew Mangan or Danny Sweetman can talk about football. They just can't. And because they're in the game, you have to be outside of the game and an admirer and a fan of the game to talk about it like a fan. But there is now becoming quite a fine line between the establishment, you know, like yourselves, yeah, if you like, in the podcast world, and like Andrew and Arse Blog in the blogging and pod world. They're not a million miles away from being as big as some of the media that they might, you know, take the mick out of. And it's very an interesting point. I'd never thought about it before, but that came across, you know, in a few of the interviews, because obviously these guys are popular and they are in demand for this sort of media.
Yeah, yeah. There's a kind of sea change in the media, and you could feel it in the way a lot of these guys are talking and how actually I related to them whilst I was reading the book.
Mm.
And whilst we're talking about sea change in media football, you interviewed the great Matt Lucas. It's been our privilege to have him on the podcast. I was lucky enough to be on with him. And it kind of struck me, you know, you had Marks and Gran on.
Mm.
We've got some fabulous stories. I'm not going to spoil it for anyone.
I'm not
going to spoil it for me. There's some fantastic stories in this book. But one of the things when you were interviewing Matt Lucas, which we did, you know, we obviously on the podcast, we didn't kind of cover this sort of thing, but he kind of represents a sea change in football. Mm. You know, the LGBT side of it, the struggling actor, the, you know, he kind of represents that guy where from the days of Marks and Gran, the 80s, through to modern day football, he represents the club, he represents the game. But that came through in all the contributors. Which one of those contributors really struck you as, you know, the sea change in the way in the club and the game?
Well, I think Matt's a very good case in point, because obviously, you know, a lot of people like to harken back to what they call the good old days, you know, when we all stood on the terraces, when we, you know, rampaged down when we scored, when we never actually saw the goal being scored because we were smaller than everyone else who stood in front of us. And it's all very lovely to harken back, and people who don't understand that probably don't understand why we loved it so much. Matt's very different. You know, that Matt generally found that whole period very scary. And the unclean toilets and the unclean terraces, although he had a routine, although he went and he stood on the North Bank every week as a teenager, he doesn't miss that. He's almost the reverse of the modern football fan, and he has very much is the modern football fan. So he was one of the few from the older generation who doesn't look back with any great affection. Some of the others do, but in a one of the fascinating stories and one of the very funny interludes is in the Ian Stone chapter where, and this is another theme that runs through the book, because it's a question I found myself asking, particularly the ones who are more active in the stand-up. I mean, some of these guys have gone from stand-up into television, but it is, are you able to use your love of football in your material? You know, can you write material that relates to football? Can you do football in your stand-up? And of course, the overwhelming answer is no, you can't really, because of the same reason that the publisher didn't want Alex to write half the book about Arsenal, because half the audience may not be football fans. Or if they know you're an Arsenal fan and you're a comedian, you know, you can't just talk about Arsenal. Ian Stone's the only one, I think, because he was there such a long time ago, that he can look back and laugh about the 1980s in a comedic sense now. But of course, at the time, It was absolutely horrendous. The likes of Stoney and Alan Davis were going to away games on their own as teenagers in carriages full of drunken men where they were being run after every game, you know, back to the train station. That was the reality of football in the 80s. And you can look back and laugh about it now. But of course, at the time, it really, really wasn't funny. And football was a pariah. You know, pre-1990 World Cup, late 80s football in this country, if you were proud to be a football fan, you were pretty much saying to someone who wasn't a football fan, well, actually, I'm a hooligan. You know, you weren't, but that was what society thought of football in the 80s. So that's quite interesting, that dynamic, and how you sort of wish there's some parts of that you love and you miss. But when you really think about it, would you want to take your teenage son to that football now? No. There are elements of it you might want back, but that's the seriously funny yet funnily serious side of it. But it did come through that you can't talk about football on stage very easily. That's another theme, I think.
To be fair, that as somebody sort of of an age, I could relate to all that. You know, go back and there's memories of certain events, etc., where. You know, it wasn't pleasant. It just wasn't pleasant at all. And okay, you look back, it's nostalgic because you were there with your mates, or it was a great game. But there were certain aspects. There's the difference to Daryl Breen, who's came late to actually go into games, and Hugh Dennis, and their joy of it now, of being able to go. There's also the negative side. You talk about Alex Brooker and there's a couple of others who are kind of self-confessed negative fans.
That's what I sit next to him. Trust me, the guy who sits in front of him gets a good kicking from his artificial leg a lot when things aren't going well. No, I mean, I think I made a conscious decision not to ask questions about the era, the club, the board. It wasn't the place. I could have easily done it. There are people who've given me a lot of material that I could use that I didn't use. I just made that decision that it wasn't that sort of book. So yes, there are people talk about how negative and frustrated they have become in recent years, but I pretty much left it at that. I didn't want to take that any further. I sort of cut those. If the interview was going in that direction, I either made the notes and didn't use it or just cut it off, because whilst I could have written a whole other book, with some of the stuff, I didn't want to. I wanted it to be a light-hearted and emotive read, not a frustrating read.
It really comes through as a game about the individual, about the individual's love of the club and their relationship with the club. The Marks, I heart back the Marks and Gran.
I think you might want to explain to a lot of people, because I knew who they were. I chased after them for the book. I think most people, because they're not on television, may not know. Lawrence Marks and Maurice Gran have been writing sitcoms since the early 70s. So like the likes of Shine On, Harvey Moon, Birds of a Feather, now being revived, obviously. And my particular favourite, probably the best sitcom ever made, is The New Statesman. You know, they wrote the script for Rick Mayall, the man for the perfect role in Thatcherite Britain. Brilliant chapter that, but I think most people wouldn't necessarily know them because they're not the face in front of the camera. They'll know their work, but they won't know they know their work.
Exactly. I'm just going to say there's a story about Nicholas Anelka and Arsene Wenger.
Brilliant.
I can't spoil it. You've got to buy the book. Yeah. It is magic. It is one of the funniest things I have read.
I think the one where he relayed the conversation between Arsene Wenger and Ray Parlour in Wenger's first week at the club was a classic as well.
Yeah, and the bits of David Dean. And this is the thing that kind of gets me. A lot of these guys have become part of the club. They do a lot of work with the club. And they get to meet their heroes. The story, but as you've already mentioned, depending on what era you come from, your hero will be slightly different, from Chippy to Camp, Wrighty, you know. But one of the things that gets me is there are friendships formed. And obviously these guys get to a place where they get to meet their heroes in the pitch. And Paul Kay and Thierry.
Brilliant.
Is there a budding romance there?
Well, it's either it's well, there are two stories. I have to say, I mean, I shouldn't say this. I think probably my favourite chapter is Paul K. Not just because of the material was just so incredibly funny, but because he engaged so much with me. He wanted to see it. He sent it back with suggestions. He wanted to change quotes. He wanted to add bits. You know, he was just wanted it to be the best it could be. And he was just fantastic. But there's two stories. One, obviously, because these guys, a lot of them had periods where they were writing for the Arsenal magazine. So Paul Kay was the last 2 years at Highbury and the first 4 years at the Emirates. And he had this situation where he was doing a Q&A with Thierry Henry. And Thierry Henry leaned in towards him and touched his leg under the table. Yeah, in a purely Gallic, you know, affectionate friendship sort of way. So he's rubbing Paul's K with one hand and Paul with the other hand under the table. He's taking his phone out to text all his mates saying, Thierry Henry's touching my leg. And I'd say, but I have to say, one of my favourite stories in the whole book, and I will, if you don't mind, I will talk about this one because I love it so much, is the Paul K one that I finished the chapter with where he met Tony Adams. Because Paul K, for those of you who don't know Paul K, the younger listeners, Dennis Pennis as was, but he's in Game of Thrones now. He's more of a comedic actor and a serious actor, but Dave, he was originally.
We often say, oh no, Gav's gone full Strutter. Paul K played Strutter.
Oh, right, okay.
In one of his things, yeah. So the listeners should be aware of Strutter.
Well, when Paul K, about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, I think, was in Matilda in the West End, and the lights went up at the end, and Tony Adams and his second wife and all his children were in the front row. And Paul K asked the stage manager quickly, you know, go and intercept Mr. Adams as he leaves and bring him round to ask him, say, I'd like to meet him and he can come, his children can come over tour of the set and everything. Now, you've got to realise Paul K, in my world, is about as famous as it gets, you know, and he's an international film star these days. But for him, Tony Adams is his all-time hero. And add to that, Paul K at the time was, is an alcoholic. At that time was 3 years, I think it was from the book, or 2 years sober. And one of the reasons he's pulled his life together is reading Addicted by Tony Adams. So to meet his hero as a footballer, his hero as a captain and an ambassador for his club, but then his hero, somebody who was a mentor, you know, by default in him changing his life and pulling it around. To meet Tony Adams and the story he tells about meeting Tony Adams. Obviously, he wanted to hug and kiss this epic man in front of him, but he didn't feel he could, obviously, so he just went to shake his hand and basically leant in and said, Tony, you know, I'm an alcoholic, I'm 3 years sober, and one of the reasons I am is because I read your book and I want to thank you. And Tony Adams just pulled him in and gave him a massive hug and said, I'm proud of you, Paul, I'm proud of you. And it was probably the greatest moment of his life. And this is a guy who's been nominated for awards, you know, all over the world. Just probably my favourite story in the book, to be honest.
Yeah,
I did it justice.
Dave, look, I'm not going to blow sunshine up your backside. I'm really not, okay? It is a book which I can, when I'm reading certain chapters, I can remember where I was. I can remember the smell. I can remember the feel of it. When people mentioned the 97-98 season, I was in a pub in Armandford watching the Everton game.
Mm.
And a friend of mine, Anthony Rees. Now, Anthony Rees was Charlie Nicholas's boot boy at the Arsenal. There's a picture of him as captain of the Arsenal youth. And Tony Adams is behind him, Martin Keown, Paul Davis, all these guys are there. And Paul Rees, when I was reading the book, and I can't remember which chapter it was, but somebody mentioned that. I can remember Paul Rees hugging me when we're both drunk, saying, this means more than 89.
Mm.
You know, and it had that effect. The book really does have that effect. You know, you can smell it, you can touch the moment.
Well, it's what I tweeted the other day when it was Tony Adams' birthday, because that, I think, more than one chapter, as you say, it came up, but it's that commentary, isn't it, from Martin Tyler? That just sums it all up.
Magical moments. I remember beer going up, and, you know, you can remember getting wet with all the, you know, stinking of lager, and it invokes those memories. It is that fantastic. Is there one particular part of the book which evokes one of those memories for you? Do you remember where you were from something?
Oh, crikey, there's loads of them, Jason. I can't. Oh, you put me on the spot there. I can't bring to mind any one particular one. I think probably the Copenhagen 94, the Palmer game, which came up in a lot of the chapters. I remember, you know, being sat with a load of mates in a flat with beer, watching it on telly, but we had the television on with the volume down because we used to listen to Jonathan Pearce. Now, if you're not Londoners and you think of Jonathan Pearce now as being match of the day, in the 90s, Jonathan Pearce was on Capital Gold, and Capital Gold was the retro Capital station, but on Saturday afternoons or evenings it had football commentary, and Jonathan Pearce was just that year, everything he did for Arsenal was just epic. He's the one who coined the phrase the magic man Merson does it again, and just that whole run to the final, you just had to have the volume down on the telly and listen to Jonathan Pearce. So you know that, and that came through those sort of things. I mean, there's loads of times, but there's obviously, you know, there's a lot of games I've been to. I think the one that came up a lot was probably the one, very cliche, but a lot of them spoke about it, was the Henri coming back. And a lot of people spoke about it in different ways, like Tom Rosenthal used a brilliant analogy of, because when I interviewed Tom, it was just after Prince had died, and people would say, well, I never got to see Prince. And and there was a thing that a lot of people were saying, you know, it's like, I should have been to see Prince. You know,
I've seen him twice.
Yeah, there you go.
But, both at the O2.
All those people said, I wish I'd seen Henri play for Arsenal. And then they did. You know, they never saw him live. And then he came back. And when he came back, he did that. And there's loads of people covered that. I mean, Ian Stone interviewed him on Absolute Radio on Rock and Roll Football after the event. And he said it was, I don't think this has come out, and I won't go into a huge amount of detail, but he sat in the changing room at the Emirates till about 1:15, 1:30 on his own in his kit after that game. After everyone else had left, Thierry Henry was still sat there, just absorbing it and being there as the fan. And that has, I mean, as far as I'm aware, I hadn't read that anywhere else, but I mean, that was in an interview. And that's just a crazy story. I mean, everyone says, you know, this time I'm playing, I'm a fan. And you could be cynical and say, yeah, you're a fan getting paid 70 grand a week while you're on loan from, from New York. But he was a fan, and that whole, but yeah, that was one instance where I think if you were in the stadium that night, it's one of those ones where you're going to say, I was there. You know, it's like the last time that everyone thought Bergkamp was going to go, and the whole stadium singing one more year, one more year. And there's certain games, and the Henri four against Leeds, which was that wonderful. And that, you know, he did it against Leeds, and then he came back and he did it again. And I can't remember which comedian talked about and how lovely it was that all the Leeds defenders stood still while Alex Song, you know, passed it exactly where Henri pointed it. It was almost like it was in slow motion. It was in slow motion. They talked, well, like, Henri's back, we better let him score the perfect Henri goal. But it's just, that was one of the brilliant ones, and described beautifully in two or three of the chapters by the individuals concerned.
It was really thought-provoking. We're going to wrap this up now. Just one thing. There are so many stories we haven't covered. There's so many things which will make you laugh out loud. There's so many things which will make you think about your own relationship with the club in this book. To any listener out there, buy it, okay?
We must mention Comic Relief, though, Jason, if you wouldn't mind.
I'm going to come to that in one second. Oh, okay. I've got one more question to ask you. Now, your previous novel, Geordie Armstrong on the Wing, very different kind of books with, I suppose, you've gone from interviewing legends, as in Charlie George and Pat Rice, you know, some true all-time Arsenal greats, talking about an all-time Arsenal great, to interviewing celebrities about their love for something bigger than them. No offence to them, but it's bigger than them. Was it an easy transition, or did the guys make it easy for you?
Yeah, they did. I mean, as I say, you've got to remember, when it all comes down to it, there's just one Arsenal fan chatting about football to another Arsenal fan about something they both love. I forgot within 5 or 10 minutes in most instances that I was chatting to a celebrity, to be honest. And they felt the same about me. it just wasn't like that. But I think going back to the Geordie thing, and I know we've had this conversation offline, I know you don't agree with it necessarily, but I think what people liked about the Geordie book, the few that read it, was that it was very conversational in style. And it's the way, when I started blogging in 2011, I don't have any I don't have any pretenses about being a great writer. I like football. I think I know about football, and I like writing about football in the way that you and I would talk about football. So I'm like blogging like you're podding. And that's the way I did the Geordie book. And what came across from the reviews and people who spoke to me was they felt they were drawn into the conversation. So I thought, well, I've hit on something here, because you know that's obviously what I'm good at. It works. People, football fans, get drawn into a conversation where somebody's talking to a hero about another hero. And I thought I could use it. I thought I could use the same methodology, if you like, the same theory in this book. So I've done it. It's not like I ask a question, they give an answer, and it's a quote. It's not like that. Don't get me wrong. It's a conversation. But I feel that the reader hopefully will feel like they're drawn into almost like a fly in the wall situation where they can sort of feel like they're part of that conversation. And that's the way I try to write it. And that's what I learned from doing the Geordie book, to be honest. So it's a very similar skill set. And I just hope it works, as you say, with different types of or different types of individuals. But
yeah, well, I got to be honest, I felt part of it. So, it, you know, I've related to it in exactly that way. It's been an absolute pleasure reading it and doing this. Now, as you've just said, comic relief for the listeners out there. From the proceeds of the book, £2 from each book sold will go to support comic relief.
Certainly initially, yeah. I mean, without going into a lot of detail, when you start going wholesale with the likes of Amazon and Waterstones, you don't make a lot of money from selling books. So initially, all the books we sell at the events, through the Legends publishing site, through the pre-launch site, yes, 10% of the book sale. When it goes to, you know, Amazon pay you £8 for a £20 book, you can't do that. But certainly initially, that's what we wanted to do.
Brilliant. So if you could tell the listeners about the upcoming book launch at the Tollington, where you can get the book, your user handle, etc., so they can purchase it, Legends Publishing, etc. Go mad, Dave. Go mad.
Yeah, well, I'll go back to the comic relief thing. Just the logic behind the comic relief obviously was it, and I probably didn't need to do this. I'm glad I did. I thought if I approached the people with a comic relief endorsement, it would be harder for them to say no to the interview. I didn't want a situation where these were, who the hell are you? Yes, I'll do it, but I want to be paid for my time. Not that anybody came anywhere near saying that, but I thought if it was a comic relief product and comic relief were going to benefit, as these guys were all comedians, there was a perfect synergy there. And comic relief did indeed endorse the product. We're not just giving money to comic relief, it's a comic relief endorsed product, which is obviously fantastic for us. So that was that side of it. And with Legends Publishing, I think the website will be, when this pre-launch finishes, which is on Friday of this week, it will go live on, it's legendspublishing.net/funny will be where you can buy it online initially. It will go into Kindle and Amazon in the new year. But pre-Christmas, we're going direct from the Legends site and also from, as you say, launch and signing events. The first one, and the launch is at the Tollington. I have to say, you're one of only three or four people who've seen the PDF of this book. I haven't seen the book yet. It's arriving on Sunday. It's been sent from Poland, first edition, printed in Poland this week and being sent over to us. So the publisher will receive it on Sunday. So the hardback is not arriving yet. So the launch is the following Saturday at the Tollington from 11 till 12:30 before the Borough game. And I will be joined, fingers crossed, unless they change their mind at this stage, by Tom Rosenthal, Alex Brooker and Jim Campbell. And then every home game thereafter, I'm hoping to do something. The next one, pre-Spurs, will be an early morning event at Pyebury Corner. I think Bournemouth will be at the Eaglet, and Stoke on the 10th of December will be at the Old Supporters Club in St Thomas's Road. So that's where we are so far. There will be others.
Brilliant.
Watch my Gunnar Dave 66. I'm not going to be shy of promoting them, shall we say.
Good man. I always remember. Give us a nod and we'll get on the retweets. Yeah. That's it from us, guys. Dave, congratulations. It's a fantastic book. I thoroughly enjoyed Geordie Armstrong and the Wing. That to me was a fabulous book. If anybody is interested in the Geordie Armstrong book as well, that is still available to purchase.
Absolutely.
We also did a book review on that, myself and Dave, last year. And that's on YouTube episode 81. No, it's back in our back catalogue on the website. So if you want to take a listen to that, please do. It's one of the more prouder moments. I'm very proud of ABW, but it's one of the more prouder moments for myself on here. Thank you very much, Dave. Congratulations. It's a great book. It's a great book. Please, guys, go out, support Dave. It's a brilliant read. You will laugh. You will relate to it. I don't care if you're a 60-year-old Arsenal fan from Islington or you are a 20-year-old Arsenal fan from California. You will relate to this book. You will relate to the human side of it. You will relate to the stories. It will make you laugh. It will make you think about the club and its history. So many fantastic stories, so many funny stories. Keep an eye out for the Matt Flam story. It's pure genius. Dave, congratulations and thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, guys. It's been really enjoyable. Thank you so much. Cheers.
Danny, thank you.
Oh, thank you. You have to be here.
That's it. Okay, that's all from us tonight. I hope Ian Dalal has been good. Go out, buy the book. It's seriously, seriously brilliant. Thank you very much for listening, guys, and keep it Arsenal. Good night.
So how should we put this bit at the end? This could be the end bit on its own. Careful to say. We were just talking, weren't we? So weren't really sure, because I listening to it, even though I was here, I wasn't sure where to get Dave's book from. But then we went to ask him, but he's busy, so he had to go. So, but there's a website called Indiegogo, which is like GoFundMe. It's a crowdfunding site. And if you go to them, and they've only got 35 hours left on it, but if you can donate £20, well, not donate, you give £20 and you get an author signed edition. And it says, you will be sent a copy of the brand new book supporting blah, blah, blah. Yet, funnily, da, 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 da. Ah, this includes a £2 donation to Comic Relief, which is the important bit. And the next one is £30. And then you get a comedian signed edition. And that includes a £10 donation to Comic Relief. So it doesn't say who's going to have signed it. There's only 50 of those available. Ooh. And then the other one, the last one is £35 limited print edition. You will be sent a copy of the brand new book. I'm not going to read the same thing over and over. Plus, signed by the author Dave Seeger, plus a limited edition print of the artwork used on the book's front cover. The price includes a £5 donation to Comic Relief. Regional post and packaging, yeah, because if you live on the moon, they're not going to post it to you on the moon, are they? So you have to pay for the postage. And the final one is £40, and then you will get two copies of the book, and signed by Dave, and a £4 donation to Comic Relief. And there's some of these things are limited, so I think I might go and do the £20 one just so I can get Dave's signature. I think he signed my the Geordie Armstrong book. You've got a copy of that as well, haven't you?
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's very good. It's on the top of my... I've got a pile there of about 15 Arsenal books, and his one is on the top, because it was the last one I was looking at, not because he was coming on, but just because... Yeah, so you go to this Indiegogo page, and there's a little video that will explain to you what's going on, and then it's got pictures of like Matt Lucas in his Arsenal scarf, and then there's Dara Breen, and... yeah, just talking about the book and what they've been saying and stuff like that. So it's worth going and have a look at. So we'll have that on the website. That's the point of whole sticking this little bit on the end. It's on, if you go to the website, www.abirdcampwonderland.co.uk, and then go and have a look on podcast 163, and then I'll put a little bit of blurb halfway down the page, and it has a click here. Then it'll open it up into a new link, and it'll take you to this page. So that's an easy way to go and get the book and make sure you get a signed copy. They've had, they're trying to raise £5,000. It's a flexible goal. Not sure what a flexible goal. The campaign will receive all the funds raised, even if it doesn't reach the goal. That's the important bit. Jolly good. So they've got £2,350. Yeah, so you go in there, you dig deep, use Fife's credit card details. His PIN code is, I don't know what it is.
I don't know, I've forgotten.
Oh, I keep using it all the time, poor boy. He's getting credit card bills for about £30,000 every month.
He's a star.
Yes.
So go on, Gunners, go out there, support Comic Relief, support Dave, support the Arsenal. It's seriously, it's a brilliant book. And if you're looking for a really good read about an Arsenal legend, Geordie Armstrong on the wing, it is just a fabulous, fabulous read about a true Arsenal legend. It's on Podcast 81 on YouTube, and it's on our back catalogue on the website. But go on, support Dave.
But don't go to Amazon and buy that book, because I was just looking through Dave's tweets, and he's put, hold on, where was it? It's something about Amazon trying to mug him off again, because they have... It says, Amazon being a law unto themselves, they have reduced the price of his book, Geordie Armstrong on the Wing, to £6.99. That includes postage. So he says, fill your boots. So I reckon, like Dave was saying, he's going to get about 10 pence out of that. But yeah, I'll put the Amazon link in, but try and get it from Legends Publishing, the people who published, I think it was Legends who published that one. If it wasn't Legends,
it's Legends.
So yeah, don't try and get it from Amazon. In fact, just message Dave on Twitter and say, can I buy a signed copy off you? Because if you're an old Arsenal fan, or you want to know a little bit about the history and one of the greatest wings we ever had, go and have a look at that. It's even on Kindle.
Brilliant.
They should get you to read the audiobook version of it.
You don't want my dulcet tone. Let's end this.
Go on, then.
It was a pleasure talking to Dave, and really enjoyed that. Murder Inc. It mo
the ass to got me like that. If it get any fatter, man, the rule gon' have to get at her. And our situation won't matter. I come to make you smile in the freakiest manners. J to the L-O, hello. No, I'm not Lee Harvey, y'all's wall. I'm the rule and a shot call off the wall like MJ in his early days. It's the Ink and Lopez now.
Trying to tell me how you want my time. Trying to tell me how I'm on your mind. See, it never had to be this way. You should've never played the games you played. Now I'm seeing that you're kinda lame. Knowing how the situation changed. Funny, funny, baby, that you want me. When you had me, love is crazy. Now I can smile and say, ain't that funny? Funny, baby, that you want me. Now you're looking like a lonely man. I remember how you did me wrong. Now you're hurting cause my love is gone. Everybody gets a chance to burn. You can take it as a lesson learned. Funny day, funny day, baby, that you want me. When you had me, love is crazy. Now I can smile and say, ain't that funny day, funny day, baby, that you want me.
I fly by red line, test the roast line. Oh, I never been a sucker for spit the ism, hit them, get rid of them. Man, you know Ty, get it gully. And ain't that funny how they want me, see me working with money. But Caddy ain't a dummy, what these brodies want from me? Cause all I got is G and murder, I-N-C.
I really wish you wouldn't send me gifts. Trying to make me sit and reminisce. Trying to blind me with your bling and bling. Thought I told you love don't cost a thing. Hope you realize that now I'm through. And I don't ever wanna hear from you. I had enough of being there for you. Now I'm laughing while you play the fool.
Funny day, funny baby, that you want me. When you had me, love is crazy. Now I can smile and say, ain't that funny day, funny baby, that you want me. When you had me, love is crazy. I'm glad I can smile and say, ain't that funny.
Maybe we can be friends. Na 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 na.